Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. You are listening to the Next Best Series podcast, and this is our review of Game of Thrones Season 8, Episode 2, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
Perhaps I can give you justice in the name of our king.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to an episode of Next Best Series, part of the Next Best Picture podcast, where we cover television. This week, we are covering Season 8, Episode 2 of Game of Thrones on HBO. The title of this episode is A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. It is directed by David Nutter, written by Brian Cogman. And join me for this podcast review, I have JC Aldridge.
What's up?
And Josh Williams.
What's going on, everybody?
All right, so no Will Mavity this week. He unfortunately does not have Wi-Fi, so he was unable to join us for this episode. But he did want me to pass along a message to everyone and let you all know that he absolutely adores this episode. It's one of his favorites of the series, and he gives it a 9 out of 10. Will the rest of us feel the same way about it? We will save grades for later. We'll discuss some other things, such as our MVP of the episode, funniest lines or moments of the episode, most memorable scenes. We'll save all that to the end. Right now, I want to get general reactions out of the way before we get to a scene-by-scene breakdown. So, JC, general thoughts on episode 2 of season 8, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
General thoughts. So I watched this episode with a group of friends last night, and it was just, I mean, maybe it was the atmosphere, maybe it was just like the hot dogs in the air, but man, was me and this episode, we were in love. Like, it also was very stressful. It's a very stressful episode, but just, I mean, the dialogue, the character development, even this far into the show, everything that was building up was just so complete. I got so much of what I wanted in this episode that I had been hoping I would get. And I just really loved this episode. I was so, when it ended, when those final credits came through, I literally was like, wait, it just started. I don't understand. So it just flew by in the best way possible. Really enjoyed it. Excited to talk about it.
Okay, and Josh, what about you? Because you actually have a very unique experience with the show this year. Why don't you tell everybody, before you give your general thoughts, what you have done in preparation for Season 8 this year?
Well, what I've done in preparation of Season 8 is watched the entire show. Because prior to this year, I had never seen an episode of Game of Thrones. And I'd always heard everybody talk about it. And I'm a huge fan of fantasy and Lord of the Rings, so I knew I would probably enjoy the show. I just, for some reason, was lazy and never got around to watching it. So
shame.
I had a group of
shame.
Friends kind of
shame.
I had a group of friends kind of pressure me into watching it so that we could all talk about it, you know, at our offices and stuff. So I finally caved and I started watching it, and we blazed through the entire show in probably the span of like 2 months, and it was a lot, but I really enjoy the show. I think it's really great. So I definitely have a different kind of perspective seeing all of it within such a short span of time.
Okay. And general thoughts then on A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms.
Yeah. I'm a little jealous. JC mentioned that she got to watch the episode with a lot of her friends. And I'm a little jealous that I did not get to see the episode with the group of friends that I watched the show with, because I know there was a lot of moments that would have had certain friends just yelling and being so happy and losing their minds about certain interactions and dialogue exchanges. But I really liked the episode too. I think at first I was a little annoyed because episode one, I was really hyped and I was like, okay, cool. We're laying the groundwork. We're going to get some stuff out of the way next week. Boom, we're charging in. And then it kind of started and it was kind of more of the same of laying the groundwork. And I was like,
It's also your first experience with having to wait a week in between episodes too.
Yeah, exactly. And so I was like, I just want
to
know.
Try expanding that to 2 years, Josh. Just try.
I'm spoiled.
580 something days.
It was annoying because when we watched the premiere of season 8, we were upset because we were like, we can't just watch the next one. Like, we have to wait. But I really liked the episode. I think at first I was a little annoyed because I think I just want to know, as weird as this sounds, I just want it to be over so I can know what happens. Like, the anxiety and the pressure is just like so much that I need to know. But it had a lot of moments that made me very happy as a viewer and as a lover of film language and stuff like that. And as you know, the writing and the direction and the performances. So I think after further reflection, I'm probably in the boat with Will and JC. Like, it's one of my favorite episodes in a long time.
Yeah, I will echo that statement that this is actually one of my favorite episodes in quite a long time as well. And I want to just say, for anyone that watched this episode and did not like it, I have nothing to say to you.
I think they just want to know. I think I have a theory that people who didn't like it, they just want to know what's going to happen. Like, I think they just need to know who's going to die. Like, they're tired of watching people talk. Like, they just want to know how it ends.
I also think some of it maybe also lies with the fact that we're now technically a third of the way through the final season.
People know there's only 4 episodes left.
And so when you have an entire episode devoted to these characters that we have gone on this journey with for some of us many, many years, it's very important to have this kind of an episode. Brian Cogman he's the writer of the episode. He talked about how in other battle episodes they have done in the show's past before, normally you'd kind of have 15, 20 minutes devoted to scenes such as the one that this episode is comprised of before we got to the battle in the same episode. For them to devote an entire episode, an entire 58 minutes to scenes of characters talking in a room with no fight scenes, no bloodshed, no body count, no CGI spectacle. There weren't even any dragons. Although we did get Ghost for a brief one second.
She was just like, he was just chilling in the background. So he was like out of focus. It's like, come on.
I don't really have the Ghost hype that a lot of people do. I don't. It, to me, it's just an animal. I don't know.
It's just an animal? Excuse me?
You don't like ghosts? Get out of here.
What? Mr. I want elephants in the war.
Hey, I wanted those elephants, right?
And
I'm just saying.
We want ghosts.
Thank you, Josh.
And I guarantee you will probably get a lot of ghosts next week, okay? But
and
for now,
you're not going to get any elephants, so.
Matt, one of my favorite moments in the entire show is in season 4 when the wildlings invade the wall and John is like, I need him more than I need you. And Sam goes and lets out Ghost and Ghost starts attacking wildlings. That's one of my favorite moments in the show.
I'm very, very happy for you.
Thank you. Ghost is back.
So moving on, what I was trying to get at here was this episode is phenomenal.
Very good.
This episode has some of the strongest writing that the series has seen, probably since the season 6 finale, Winds of Winter. Mm. And a lot of that is because a lot of the groundwork that was laid in episode 1, where we thought all of a sudden we were going to get more of these very intense or action-filled moments. I guess that's all, you know, being saved for next week. Instead, we kind of got more of the foundation and the setup laid out before us. But even more so than that, they took the time to have characters reflect on where they are and also contemplate their imminent death as well. And I think that there's a great deal of humanity that shines through. And we also saw some completion of character arcs that really gave this episode a tremendous sense of dread and foreboding for who we are possibly going to lose next week. Because honestly, for some of these characters, I don't know what else there is left for them to do other than fight and die.
I think something to complement this episode, I think something that sets this show, especially with this episode, apart from a lot of other shows, is that the willingness to have an episode like this, and I know it's only been not even 24 hours since the episode premiered, but I feel like a lot of TV shows don't take the time to kind of relish in some of the moments that this episode has. Like, there's a lot of moments where we get to see characters that we want to interact and have very important moments and very important character decisions that make total sense from the writer's perspective and from the actor's perspective. And I think that a lot of shows suffer that emotional connection by not having episodes like this. Like, obviously, as we've seen on social media, a lot of people think this episode is very like fan servicing and whatever, but I think it works to the show's advantage. You know,
point out too, because I'm tired of that fan service complaint. We've had 7 years to build up these characters to get to these fan servicey moments because they make sense, because they are predictable, because if you're following the basic foundations of storytelling, you can't be subverting expectations and throwing curveballs in the bottom of the knife. You need to be trying to throw those strikes to win the freaking game, and that is what they're doing.
Well, it's the end of the show as a whole. Like, as many emotional moments as you want. Like, it does
exactly. Let me feel all the feels. Let me have these hoorah moments, because we're not going to get them again. And Lord knows, next week, I'm sure we'll be doing this episode in tears.
Exactly. So. You know, it's kind of like, it always just makes me think that like fan fictions are sort of the child of TV shows that don't end on a story note that makes sense within the characters and the development of the plot. And, you know, this whole episode, to me, really kind of like quenched that thirst in a way that makes sense. It didn't feel disingenuous. And I think, Matt, you said, you know, all the way back in the preview episode that we did, that as long as the things that happen in this final season seem genuine to a character's self and truth, then, you know, we're happy with it. Even if it is, as people like to say, fan servicing, because I don't really think it's fan servicing if it's just because we as fans understand that this is sort of the direction they've been going towards this whole time.
Right. The groundwork has been laid for many, many years. It's not surprising. And I think that's what people are wanting. They want the Ned Stark beheading. They want the double cross betrayal that they don't see coming. But what people don't understand is that every twist that this show has ever done was always telegraphed.
Yeah.
And the signs were always there. And what I love so much is that even with two episodes down, there's still a great deal of uncertainty in terms of what is to come.
I mean, after next week, like, what in the world?
Oh, I think next week the entire chessboard is going to be reset, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's get into the episode. Let's do a scene-by-scene breakdown. This way we can go into specifics. We can come back to some of these central themes in a little bit. But yeah, I'm not hiding my feelings for this episode. This episode just struck me right in the feels all throughout, and I absolutely adored it because I know what is to come next week. I mean, I don't know, but do we really think next week is going to be happy and triumphant? You know, I don't think so. So let's just relish in this good time while it lasts. All right, so first scene. We start off with Jaime's trial in the Great Hall. Daenerys is upset with Jaime because he killed her father all of those years ago, and he didn't come with the Lannister troops, which she also blames Tyrion for when he tries to stick up for his brother. Sansa is also against having Jaime there for what he has done to House Stark over the years. Bran tells Jaime, though, hey, you know what? The things we do for love, which harkens back to what Jaime said to Bran.
I screamed when Bran said that.
Season 1, Episode 1, when he pushed him out the window. It reminded me of the Littlefinger chaos as a ladder line that he said to him in season 7. Bran just comes in with the throwback lines and everybody's like,
right?
Yeah. Bran's just going to say like the most famous lines in the show to everyone. He's going to like tell Tormund, I know you never fucked a bear.
You know what's really interesting to me about the scene though is that I hadn't realized until the scene that no one knew that Jaime is the one who pushed Bran out the window.
Yeah, I didn't realize that either.
Well, because Bran didn't remember who threw him out the window. He woke up and had no memory of it.
I forgot that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then this whole scene, I wasn't surprised that Bran wouldn't have said anything, because obviously Bran, I think, is in line with Jon and saying, like, we need all the men we can get, y'all.
We don't have time for this.
But I was still shocked. I couldn't.
Yeah.
So then Jaime looks at Brienne. When he says this goes beyond loyalty, which harkens back to something that Brienne said to Jaime in season 7. Mm-hmm. And then Brienne stands up for Jaime, which gains Sansa's approval because Sansa trusts Brienne. And then Jon says they need every man that they can get, which disappoints Daenerys, but it's clear that she should let him stay. So yeah. Grey Worm gives Jaime back his sword. Jon gives Dany the cold shoulder on the way out, probably because he's holding some important information from her right now. And Dany scolds Tyrion for failing to predict Cersei's betrayal. And she says she will find another hand who can help her take back the throne if he's not the man for the job.
That seems kind of like a low blow.
And yeah, so in talking about like this entire scene as a whole here, I can understand where Daenerys is coming from. Although I also remember a conversation that Barristan Selmy had with Daenerys back in season 5 before he ended up dying, where he essentially told her straight up like that her father ruled through fear. And then Tyrion in season 6 in Battle of the Bastards tells Daenerys that, you know, Aerys the Mad King was, you know, awful and burned people alive and things like that and everything. And it's just like one of those things where I don't really know if Daenerys, I think her anger, it's like founded, but at the same time, it's still like kind of, I felt like Bran. I felt like Bran, where I just wanted to be like, we don't have time for this. Like, why are we doing a trial?
Yeah, we should be strategizing
right now. You know?
Also, though, I don't think that she ever had any intentions of actually killing him. Like, I think that she wanted to put him in his place for sure. But mm-hmm. I don't know, y'all. Like, I am just...
No, you know what it is? I'll tell you what it is. I think she's more upset about the Cersei betrayal, and she probably thinks Jaime is being sent as a spy.
That would make sense. I just, you know, I think, and I don't know, I'm sure we'll talk more about this in the episode, but I have just been bombarded with people coming at me saying that they don't like Daenerys anymore and that they're no longer Daenerys, blah, blah, blah.
People are complaining about Daenerys. So I don't.
I've got some thoughts on that. I'll hold that for a never seen later.
Matt, right. JC, and I are gonna turn against you.
All right.
But for now, though, for all things for this opening scene, the things I definitely liked about it was this was basically this was for me the Jaime Brienne episode, in many ways.
Yeah.
And we kind of got a recount of Jaime's entire character arc here, going all the way back to season 1 and how he used to be. And this is like part of what this episode is ultimately about, is Jaime coming to terms with the man that he once was and coming to grips with the man that he has become.
Mm-hmm. Well, also the man that he wants to be.
Yes, which is exemplified by Brienne.
Mm-hmm.
He wishes he could be the knight that Brienne is. Or the which is interesting because Brienne's actually not a knight.
Yes.
Which we'll get to in a little bit as well. But for this opening scene, though, I really like the tone that it did set. Because also, too, we have to remember that a lot of these characters, like Sansa, for example, she has no idea what's been going on with Jaime and his adventures on his own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jon has no idea. Jon and Jaime haven't had a scene before season 7 since season 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a lot of these characters do not have other bits of information about the characters that, you know, we know about. So when Brienne stands up and says he defended me and got his hand cut off for it, and then Sansa, you know, mm-hmm. backs her as well, it's like, yes, yeah. This is yes, like this all makes sense.
Matt, when you say that comment about Sansa, I have to say that this episode for me did sort of like, because I've always been like, Sansa's such a bitch, like I can't.
Oh my God.
But you know what? Like this episode, I kind of, I'm coming around to Sansa a little bit, because I really felt like she was taking on more traits of Cersei than anybody really wanted to admit. And I think this episode once again kind of showed that, no, like even though she understands Cersei, she still clearly does trust the people who have been loyal to her. In the same way that Daenerys trusts people who have been loyal to her, and that's all I'm going to say about it.
No, no offense to Dave Hill, the writer of the first episode, but I just think Brian Cogman understands the characters maybe just a little bit better.
Yeah.
And I feel like a lot that was introduced in the first episode that kind of like got us a little, oh God, like Sansa's distrusting Dany. Oh no, there's going to be conflict between the two of them. This was like an episode where I really genuinely felt like a lot of the frustrations I felt in the first episode with some of these behind the scenes political intrigue and the suspicions that other characters have towards one another, I felt like they, while it was still there, they handled it in a much smarter way. Yes, this time around.
I agree.
And characters behaved the way that we would expect them to if they were being more practical instead of emotional. So moving on to the next scene, we see Gendry forging weapons from the dragon glass. Arya approaches and eyes him while he works, all hot and sweaty, banging shit.
Ooh.
She asks if he's made her weapon yet.
There's a shot of him where he like purposely flexes his bicep and forearm while he's like steaming something.
Well, that's a callback to season two or something like that.
Damn, Gendry.
Yeah. Because I remember she checked him out when he was doing that exact same pose back in like season two. I totally remember that. So she asks if he's made her weapon yet, and Gendry hasn't made it yet, and he underestimates Arya's abilities, saying that, you know, is she going to fight in the crypts, or is she planning on fighting, like, what's she doing? Arya wants to know what it's like to fight the dead, because Gendry has fought them before back in season 7. Gendry tells Arya that they're like death personified. Arya says how familiar she is with death, and she looks forward to meeting it. She throws the dragonglass arrows against a wall, all in the exact same spot, showcasing her skills, and demands that her weapon again before she leaves.
And now Gendry is scared and horny.
He is horny. He's got a winter in his pants that's coming out.
I'm glad that they had one more scene in between that scene they had in the premiere and a scene they have later, because without this other scene, if they had just gone from A to Z like that, I definitely would have been a little bit more shell-shocked than I already was.
Yeah, builds the tension. I like it.
Agreed.
Hey everyone, sorry to interrupt, but this is a preview of our full review of Game of Thrones Season 8, Episode 2, titled A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. In order to get the full review, you will have to head on over to our Patreon channel at Next Best Picture, where for $1 minimum a month, you can get this review, along with other exclusive podcast content from us. Be sure to subscribe to the Next Best Picture podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM, Acast, and also on CastBox. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback as well as your support. Thank you for listening. We will be back with Episode 3 of Game of Thrones next week. And remember, in order to get the full reviews, you will have to subscribe to the Patreon channel at Next Best Picture. Thank you once again for listening, as always, and we shall see you all next time.
Cannot give you back your homes or restore your dead to life, but perhaps I can give you justice in the name of our king.
Hello, this is Gary Chahot welcoming you to check out the French History Podcast. Our main show covers the history of France from the first humans until present. If you liked Mike Duncan's The History of Rome and wanted a similar program covering the land of beauty, culture, and love, we are exactly that. We also host world-renowned scholars who have delivered guest episodes on their specialties, including 18th century pirates, revolutionary booksellers in 20th century Paris, the special friendship between the Marquis de Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson, and numerous others. Learn what you love and listen to the French History Podcast today.